This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Choose the most unusual matches. Choose the best of the WWF. Choose wrestling's biggest, smallest, and strongest. Choose Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Roddy Piper's greatest hits, and wrestling's bloopers, bleeps, and body slams. Choose George the Animal Steel. Choose the Ken Patera story. Choose the life and times of Captain Lou Albano. Choose the Hulkamania series. Choose the Ultimate Warrior. And choose Macho Man Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Choose WWF World Tour, Smack and Whack'em, and UK Rampages 91, 92 and 93. Choose a journey back in time. Choose Seeing Your Video. It's time for everyone to dust off the VCR and plug it back into the television set as we take a trip into the Colosseum Home Video Vault with your host, Rory McNamara.
Episode 7 of Seeing Your Video, the show where I, Rory McNamara, stick my hand into the damp, icky cardboard box of Colosseum videos, pull one out, and then break it down to within, or very possibly beyond, an inch of its life. However, it is impossible for me to perform such an undertaking alone, so I always have a guest with me. But today, I am able to introduce you to a newcomer to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. He is my compadre on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, the king of extreme himself, Mr. Chris Lacey. Chris, welcome to Place to Be Nation.
It's a bit weird being on a, you know, doing this in a different place, in a different banner.
There's another world out there, Christopher.
You mean there's more to wrestling podcasts than just wrestling 20 years ago and Jim Cornette?
I couldn't quite believe it myself either, but I came across the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, so now we know there are just two groups of people out there who do wrestling podcasts. Just two. So a crowded market it may be, but I think the two of us can coexist together quite nicely. It's not as if there's any other competition out there, is there? I love you for that. So, Christopher, for those who have yet to make your acquaintance, just take this opportunity to introduce yourself to the Place to Be Nation, how you first got into wrestling, maybe some of who your favourites are, your standing on the current product, anything you like, my friend. Take it away.
So, I have been watching wrestling since I was knee-high to a grasshopper back in the day when ITV used to show World of Sport. I used to watch it around with grands in the late 80s. Yes, I'm that old. Started watching the Fed in 89, 90 when we first got Sky and we used to get Superstars on a Saturday after lunchtime. First proper event I remember watching, sort of remember all of it, was Mania 6, which was also the first video that I had, and have been pretty much on and off ever since. My expertise is in everything up to about 2010, because that's when I stopped watching it as religiously. As anyone who has ever heard Wrestling 20 Years Ago knows of my love of ECW, and random early WCW when it was good and weird and funny, not the shit that, you know, you have to put up with at the minute. Because, 2000s WCW, that's fucking great. growing up, loved me the bad guys. Mr. Perfect, loved Taker when he was a massive heel, Million Dollar Man, the likes. Always had a soft spot for Warrior. Warrior was my boy. You know, there was obviously, you were either Camp Hogan or Camp Warrior. Give me some crazy dude in face paint running around like an absolute nutter, I'm in. The thing with face paint as well helps, because other ones of my boys were the Road Warriors / Legion of Doom, Demolition, and when I finally saw him on WCW back when we got that in on ITV back in the 90s, Muta as well, and then Vampiro later on. My style of wrestling that I, well, wrestlers that I like, doesn't really sort of follow any sort of standard trend. You know, I love the Mutas, I love Vampiro, RVD, Steve Corino, Doring and Roadkill, and then take it into someone like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk as well. I think I just like a good actual, you know, someone that can actually wrestle. You know, but I'm not a fan of your Hogan's, your Cena, and nowadays Roman and all that. And this year, with watching wrestling, this is how much of the modern product I have watched. I watched Mania, and I watched SummerSlam, and that's it. Because NWA Power's not showing anymore, so I don't care. Sure,
you are a power man, aren't you? Well, you were a power man when you had the opportunity to be one.
Yeah, when give me NWA, that old school territory style wrestling, get that straight in my veins.
Mm-hmm. You're in very good company there. NWA 89 all the way. Yeah, 2010, it's interesting you picked that year, because that's kind of where it gets fuzzy for me as well. Now, Undertaker hits that jumping tombstone on HBK at the end of Mania 26. And, you know, as Michael's head hits the canvas, you know, so does mine against knowledge of pro wrestling. You know, if you set me up any form of pro wrestling quiz, after March 2010, that was the... If that was the focus, I'd be lucky to leave with the wooden spoon. I'd like to think in the 10 years before that, I'd be okay. Maybe.
The thing is, I watched it, and obviously I saw all of the CM Punk stuff and the Bryan stuff. I wasn't watching Raw and SmackDown every week. I'd literally just catch the pay-per-views, or yes, if there was something that was like, oh, everyone's going on about it, I'll watch that. But yeah, no, I think the problem is, because everything looks the same now, there's no differential in arenas, there's no differential even in shows anymore, that it all looks the same, all bleeds into the same. And as mentioned on a recent episode of 20 years ago from the ECW one, the whole so many near falls and what were finishes being transition moves has jaded me to, like, not every match on Raw has to have 27 near falls. Can we go back to the simpler times of Superstars and Wrestling Challenge, when jobbers got destroyed, your main guy got over in 3 minutes, you saw all the big moves, and you're like, thank you very much.
You are preaching to the choir here, good sir. As I'm sure you know, it's well worn territory, this one, for me, I'm afraid. It's get this podcast off on a downer, but you're quite correct. I'm sure there are people who regularly listen to this will just try and call us jaded and cynical, but
they can call me old if they like. I don't care.
You're younger than me, I think, by a year or so. So you know, I'll take the first hit on that one. Don't worry, I'll be your human shield, Chris. But they'll get to you eventually. But yeah, it's I pay per view. Obviously, currently working from home, as it will be for the next 20 years, probably. It's okay to have the pay-per-view on in the background on a Monday morning. It helps me concentrate on my emails, so that's something, I suppose. But otherwise, it's I still watch, I still enthuse, I still read all the results, even the AEW ones. But I can't remember the last time I felt legitimate excitement as a pro wrestling fan. It's I wasn't watching closely enough during the summer of 2011. As I'm sure people are shouting at their listening devices right now, I've obviously gone back and watched that. Money in the Bank 2011, fantastic event. Stunning main event, of course. Won't get any argument out of me on that topic. But I'll always have at least one eye on the product. But then I console myself, if that's the right word, with the fact that I'll get to this stuff in 20 years' time again anyway, as will you, Chris, because we're both in this for the long haul.
You know, ECW will be gone by then, you know. You said I'll still be about.
We're only 6 years away from WWECW.
Oh, fuck.
The Sandman versus the Zombie. He's marching towards you.
Oh, the joys.
We'll get there. We'll get there. But back to the here and now and today. So obviously on Senior Video, we look at the home video classics section of the WWE Network. Chris, as this is your first time on the show, a specific question about your relationship, choose that word advisedly, with Coliseum Videos or Silver Vision, as they were distributed by over here. Would you call yourself or ever call yourself in your past a bit of a collector? What were some of the ones which you had back in the day that you wore out considerably?
Well, you could call it a collector, but I still have in the X's loft every WrestleMania on VHS through 1 through to 16.
Very nice.
I pretty much had every big pay-per-view on video. Basically, if I ever went anywhere and saw a wrestling video, predominantly going to admit that I would have picked it up if it wasn't one I already had. I think I pretty much had all of the specials and stuff. Obviously, there's some of the stuff that's on the network that wasn't released over here. And then there's some stuff on the network that was released that they don't have. More of that in a little while.
Oh yes,
but you know, it's one of those of I had them all because as a kid, it would be a wrestling video on, the Hasbro's out, full own federation going on, making my own storylines. You know, up to the age of about 12, 13, I was fucking all in.
Booker of the Year 1993, Chris Lacey. Yeah, it just rolls off the tongue.
Screwy finishes were never a thing in my federation.
Ever the doyen of the pinfall. So, in 3 minutes. And speaking of which, takes us through the video that you have chosen for us to review today, Christopher. Tell us what you have chosen, and also tell us what you haven't chosen.
So, when this idea of me coming on here was mentioned, you're like, oh, you can rewatch some of the old videos and stuff. I was like, fuck yes. I know the first one I want. I want to rewatch the Warrior video that I had as a kid with joyous matches against Andre and Bobby Heenan, only to turn out when I actually started watching the VHS, the Silver Vision or the one on the network, to realize this is an American version of the Ultimate Warrior's first video that came out a year earlier than the UK one. The UK one isn't on there and was very, very different to the one I was hoping for.
Don't blame me. Blame our wonderful network curators, the people who see fit to put 10 random episodes of Velocity up before completing the Saturday nights or any of the challenges. I'm going down that rabbit hole. So, yes. Yeah,
we still want them to put all of the original superstars up. You know, they've got it.
Damn you, Albert Patterson. But even the superstars from 92 onwards, I mean, they 10 a spin. As we record this, they've only just got to April 93. There's still a case to be made that superstars... Okay, April 93 is probably where you could say it stopped being the A show. Fair enough. But there were still lots of storyline stuff that happened on superstars in the 90s. And just randomly popping into my head, Diesel beating Razor for the IC title, even jumping way ahead to the end of 96. Now, the Pillmanizing happened on Superstars. That wasn't on Raw. So it's not as if it was a complete dud. And even if it was, I could just veg out to them on a Thursday night for 45, 50 minutes. I fear the network is already a toy that a certain somebody has lost interest in after 6 years, and it is a shame. But the home video classic section still does survive. So to clarify, we are looking today at the Ultimate Warrior 1989, as it is known on the network. There are, I believe, three Ultimate Warrior VHS is out there. The one we are watching, the UK one from 1990 that Lacey wanted to watch. I'm sure we'll get to it one way or the other eventually. And the Ultimate Warrior 1992, which is also on the network. And I will get to that at one point. But we are watching Ultimate Warrior 1989. Chris, are you ready?
Let's get it on.
Let's get it on.
WWF, what the world is watching.
Strap yourself in tight, warriors. shy away from nothing and fear nothing as you hang on to the body parts of the Ultimate Warrior as we witness a first-class production from Coliseum Video of the upbringing and the destiny of the Ultimate Warrior. From the mighty Hercules, the legend that he once was, as we snap the almighty chain right in half, then let us travel into the rematch against the Honky Tonk Man after we had already captured the Intercontinental Belt and there was nothing that he could feel or do against the power of the Warriors. Then let us go to King Haku when we do remember that the Warriors made him bow to the power. Then let us go to the WWF Heavyweight Champion when I took him for what he was, took him for all he was, and made him feel the pain and torture that we had to deliver. Then let us go to the Super Posedown. How can we forget when the Warrior had his back turned, ravishing Rick Rude, laid it on him thick and thin, but you, Rick Rude, realize that it isn't finished. It has only just begun!
With a very wrinkly Warrior, I think it's fair to say, crushing some cigs, I call it as I see it. Then we got, this was quite the culture shock for me, a Slim Jim commercial with him in it, where he just sort of runs around a house for a little bit. Chris, I've got to say, maybe it's all the wrestling 20 years flowing through my veins, but Ultimate Warrior doing a Slim Jim commercial, it just didn't sit with me.
Though it did make me want to eat our equivalent, which would be a pepperami.
I was going to ask you that. They are pepperamis? They look a bit thinner.
They are a thinner version of a pepperami and they are differently spiced. But for a UK audience, because we don't get Slim Jims, that is the nearest UK substitute.
They are a bit of an animal. I might have to find one of the ads on YouTube and play it in at the end now. Oi, come back and finish me off, you wimp. What's the matter? Too spicy for you?
Exactly.
Classic WWF What the World is Watching intro tape, and then the music kicks in. You know the one. Warrior tells us we need to strap ourselves in. There you go. Complete with all the usual references to Destiny and whatnot. Before what seems to be a rather hasty edit, focusing in on his eye, before we get some random clips of Warrior in action. We then cut back to Big Jim, who outlines the matches we will see on the tape. That's some fine organisational skillage there, and confirms to us that it has indeed only just begun. Our first match is against Hercules in February 1988. This appears to be from a challenge taping. This, of course, predates their Mania 4 clash, so I expect this one will be them ironing out the kinks before the five-star masterclass we would be treated to at Trump Plaza. Stare down to start, and Vince keeps calling him Hercules Hernandez. We only hear Vince on commentary here, by the way, as we go straight into a tug of war with the chain. Warrior is about to win, but Herc puts in a kick, and not a punch. Warrior just shoves him off and breaks the chain in two with one more heave. Herc then uses the remains on Warrior and there's the bell. He continues to pour it on, classic Vinceism there, by choking Jimbo out until various doughy jobbers yank him away. Christopher, far be it from me to want to steal your thunder, but you have a classic line elsewhere. At least it was short. And at least this was short.
Yeah, this is, right. So I'm going to refer back to the 90 video. So the 90 video opens with a match against Hercules. Probably it was either a challenge or a superstar start where you get a proper match. This was a moment of what the fuck and why the fuck are you putting this on a video? The only redeeming factor this has is, oh, Warrior breaks the chain. But then he gets choked out and has to be saved by fucking jobbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I think they were going for chronological order, which they largely keep to on this tape. a geek like me approves that sort of thing. But you've got a match with Hercules right there from a month later. Not exactly an Epicurean's dream, that match, but
there
it's
is
Warrior
an interesting
winning.
Bit,
it's where it
though.
All really starts.
First time I've ever seen him do it, has his knuckles wrapped.
Oh, good spot. I did not notice this.
It's the only time I have ever seen that, where he has his knuckles wrapped and not, you know, the bare hands.
Okay, I'm going to be that guy. Was he hiding anything in there?
The coke?
That's pretty much where I was going.
Well, you know, he needs to do one of those promos. He needs to start shouting about something.
Yeah, they don't just come out of thin air, so to speak. But yes, when we are talking about Warrior's knuckles, I can't even think of a witty retort to that. When we're talking about his knuckles, that should tell you everything you really need to know about this match. I wouldn't have put this one on there. Maybe just the clip of him breaking the chain in the little compilation we got a couple of minutes earlier. Then just show the fucking WrestleMania 4 match. It's only 4.5 minutes long after all. Warrior getting a victory sets him on course for the next year and a half. I'd have stuck that one on there. Although we wouldn't be talking about the tape on his knuckles, so everyone's a winner, are they not?
Little victories.
You're always, I mean, Lacey is, when it comes to observation, nothing gets past this one, everybody, by the way, you know. He doesn't miss a trick, this fella. Okay. I'm warning you now.
Well, wait till we do other tapes and then we do some crowd spotting.
That's such a fun game on Wrestling 20 years ago. It has to be. The dearth of in-ring action, especially me focusing on WCW, you have to crowd spot or you would go completely doolally. Let's go back to Jim. He was getting prepared for the next battle in parts unknown. Love the gimmick. They said to him, something is going to happen to you at the SummerSlam. And yes, he calls it that. And how right they were. So we go to SummerSlam 1988 in MSG. And you all know how this one goes down. I do love Gorilla calling those opening chords somebody's music.
Yep.
And then just a minute after that, history has indeed been made. Jimmy Hart gets Honky Tonk Man the F out of there as Warrior celebrates through huge cheers. Another golden gorilla line. This crowd has gone strictly bananas. Strictly bananas. Oh, gorilla, how I love thee.
The winner of this contest! And new Intercontinental Champion! The Ultimate Warrior!
It had to be record time, Gorilla Monsoon. It had to be record time, brother.
It is unbelievable. The garden has gone strictly bananas. History made as part of SummerSlam 88. A newly crowned Intercontinental Champion.
He went out.
The Ultimate Warrior. Oh, look at him.
Yeah, he went out and crowned himself. He went out and took the belt, brother.
Let's go back and take a look at the pandemonium that just happened.
A big clothesline by the Warrior. And all the damage is already done. Here he comes in for a big body off. Body slam right there, brother. And he's
what a splash.
Big splash. Wrapped him up. Both legs in the air. No way out, brother. We got a new champion, my man.
Greatest squash of all time, is it not?
It is the perfect squash match. The pop when Warrior's music starts, because the crowd clearly know who it is, even if Gorilla doesn't.
It's so funny. Somebody's music. Come on.
You know, he literally comes out, he does Warrior. I'll go back to what we said, Wrestling 20 years ago trope of New Jack does New Jack. Warrior does Warrior. Comes out, hits his big shit. Hits the fucking splash. Done. Thank you very much. Swing the belt. Run back. That is how you make someone huge. And obviously at this point in the career, obviously he had a fanship because obviously the face paint and stuff and had got a big thing there. But that was that moment where he went from general mid-card interest guy to the cusp of hitting the top end of the roster. And it's the way you do it. And for all the people that shit on Honky for, you know, not wanting to do what he wants or, you know, being a bit of a dick at times, he probably got a decent payday out of this, but he did the job and he did it properly.
Yep, Honky did the business here, no mistake. And it was the business that everybody had been clamouring for the last 14 months, ever since he held the belt to defeat Steamboat. There you go, getting ahead of myself. Held the rope to defeat Steamboat in the June of 1987. People were champing at the bit for him to lose the belt. And he'd get DQ'd, he'd get counted out. Rubbing nose, dirt, face, everybody in the audience. To the point where they probably, even some of them, thought he was never going to lose the blasted thing. Original plan, of course, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Then Outlaw Ron Bass comes along with his spurs and couldn't have timed it any better. And if there was any doubt at all that they had chosen the wrong man to be the guy to snatch, and I mean snatch the belt from Honky Tonk Man, now they were expunged within a quarter of a second of that opening riff. I mean, the crowd were fucking ready for it. It is a glorious moment. I know there are people out there who will try to tell you that the greatest squash ever was also at a SummerSlam, but Brock versus Cena from 2014, I will politely, and depending on who it is, not so politely, just point them in the direction of this one. And if they still hold that view after that, then you know what it is with wrestling fans and shit takes and that sort of thing. This is the one. Warrior is on his way. Thank you very much, Honky. Begin your 2.5-year job tour. And we are, to quote a third pro wrestling podcast, off to the races. I could watch this squash all day long. I really could. It's only 30 seconds. So many of the best things in life are. We switch now. I whisper that one. You never know who's listening. We switch now to Saturday night's main event in January 1989. The screen cap helpfully tells us this will be a rematch, which I quite like. Fun interview with Honky and Jimmy by Gene beforehand, in which Oakland illustrates the heavyweight part of the Intercontinental title. And thankfully, we do get Jesse on colour unedited. Back to Jim. And in this discussion, we learn he is risking a rematch because he is the Ultimate Warrior. A fine line between confidence and recklessness, saith the Gene. He sprints to the ring and Vince actually makes a good point. Yes, you heard me. Warrior is all offense and no defense. So, rematch for the IC title, Warrior defending against the aforementioned HTM. Warrior stalks around the outside and lifts Honky up from the aisle and hauls him back into the ring. Off the ropes in a big boot, Jimmy gets onto the apron and receives a noggin knocker for his trouble. Back elbow by Alt, as I've called him, because he's my mate, and then, whether I want him to be or not, and then something approximating a choke bomb. 10 punches in the corner and then a charge in the corner. Even by main event standards, it must be said, the sound is clearly being sweetened here. The boost for Honky very obviously piped in. Warrior misses a charge this time, then Jimmy distracts the ref, and guess what weapon he throws to Honky? HTM with some weak kicks and punches, and Warrior warriors up. He looks to me like he's convulsing, or maybe that's just withdrawal. Honky takes a dig. I wrote that one before the earlier gag. Learn from me, kid. Learn from me. Honky takes a chill knot. Honky takes a trip to the buckle, and there's another classic of Vinceism. Ultimate Warrior, perhaps sensing victory. Underrated one, perhaps sensing victory. Not yet, though, as HTM gets knees up on the splash. Two count off that, but then we go immediately to the finishing sequence, as I've very politely called it, i.e. a shoulder block and splash. Vince steals Gorilla's horseshoes and hand grenade line, and we are done. Christopher, the SummerSlam 1988 match is an example of how you do it between these two. This one, an example of how you don't really do it, because it was longer than 30 seconds.
See, with this one, I loved the cocaine-filled promo to start. Got me right in the mood for it. I loved when Honky tried to run away and Warrior was like, no, fuck this. Picked him up, press slams him back in the ring from the entrance. Jimmy and Honky's double-teaming and heel work, I think, worked really well. I think you have to make it longer. You couldn't have it be another 30-second squash. So, you know, him trying to get the cheating, Jimmy trying to get involved, all works. Though, as I said, it suffers from being maybe a smidge too long.
I think so.
But I still liked it. I still enjoyed it. And, you know, Warrior still did Warrior stuff. And to have him show that little bit of vulnerability to cheating, I think works.
Would probably have done this, yeah, just one level up from a squash. 3 minutes max, as I said a few minutes ago. As soon as Honky dropped the belt in MSG, he was completely done, and it was time to job to everybody in the locker room, the bus driver, the janitor, their goldfish, everybody. So he was no threat at this point. A 3 minute virtual squash, I think, would have been okay. Maybe give him some token offense, even if his sole offense is the de rigueur shot with the megaphone, and then we go home. Got to the ending very, very quickly, which is a bit of a warrior thing. We talked about this on last month's edition, his match against DiBiase in Japan. Well, they just went to the finishing sequence out of nowhere, and 20 seconds later, it was done. Same again here. I doubt they spend too much time in the back with many blueprints or going over it with tracing paper for warrior matches. Pat Patterson and the like probably weren't working themselves too hard to lay these ones out from start to finish anyway. Would have been wasting their time, I fancy. But this was fine. It was a good, strong win, because it was a strong win for Warrior on national television. He had a few main event appearances leading up to this, but Honky was still just about a name. We got to see the shoulder block. We got to see the splash. So this is right at the start of the year. And for those people, the general populace who probably would only watch the Saturday night main events, only tuned in on network television, maybe would get the occasional pay-per-view here and there. Now, I think it's matches like this that would end up making Warrior the household name that he most definitely was, certainly 12 months after this, if not by the time we get to the end of the tape in May 89. He was well on the way, and I think matches like this really did help. Now Warrior introduces our next two matches. He will destroy Haku later, but first he is out to bury the hatchet into Greg the Hammer Valentine. This one was taped at the Mega Powers Explode edition of the main event in Milwaukee in February 89, and we have Tony and Alfred on commentary. Clothesline by Warrior instantly, and then he goes after Jimmy. Shot by Greg is completely no-sold, but back in the ring after more Jimmy distraction, the Heartbreaker is used to finally put Jim down. Usual Valentine stuff, but it doesn't get far. Warrior misses a terrible elbow, though. Snapmare by the Hammer, and up he goes. Single axe rocks the Warrior, but no more. Awful, awful faceplant by the champ, but Tony barely stifles a laugh over. That was fucking terrible. Clothesline the first and the second, and now Jimmy is in. The ref clearly sees it this time, but the shin guard is in the ring. The ref sees Hart off, so Warrior uses the guard himself, and that'll do that.
The literal will just to not even take a basic face bump. How the fuck did he stay in the company for another 3 years and then get a job in WCW with that attitude? I get it, you gotta lose, but for fuck's sake, at least take a fucking bump.
Yeah, something went very wrong there. Warrior went for it, and I don't know what Valentine, say, I find Greg Valentine very hard to criticize, but here, this is an exception. I don't know what he was going for, whether he was expecting a DDT from Warrior. He just sort of flopped himself down 2 seconds later with his head nowhere near the canvas. Now, I like Greg the Hammer Valentine's fallen tree cell that we get a lot of at WrestleMania 4 as much as the next man. Here, it didn't go right. Unless he was basically just trying to let Warrior know, oi, mate, britches, big, etc.
Yeah, so it might have been one of those. See, I remember going back to the 90s tape. There's a match with him and Andre where Andre has decided no.
No, they basically puts like his fist out. Andre hated him.
And it's one of the ones where he puts his fist out and just basically lamps Warrior. So that's one of those of like, yeah, you know, there is a way and a means of sort of putting someone in their lane that still works for the match going forward. That really didn't. But I will say, I can clearly see where Eddie Guerrero got his cheat to win mentality from, with Warrior using the shin guard, watching it fly off his arm into the crowd. Guerrero was clearly taking notes of the Warrior.
I hope so. I mean, I really hope that a comparison between the Ultimate Warrior and Eddie Guerrero is as natural as you make it sound. I admit I might struggle to come up with one as smooth as that, but you've done it anyway, so nobody needs to try to do it again.
You know, if anything, you know, hot takes.
It's one word for them. You never see those two together, do you? Yeah, this was a match that Valentine clearly did not fancy. And I didn't want to see him in this position. And judging by this match, he did not want to see himself in this position either. Utterly no selling all the Warriors' offense. Say, the faceplant was a disaster. At least he didn't kick out at 3.1, as far as I can remember. Anyway, he might have done for all I know. We got very quickly to the next match. But yes, Warrior just marches on this one. It's, there's no Greg Valentine VHS, I don't believe. Certainly not a WWF one anyway. But he is over a lot of the tape, so I will get to see a bit more of him. Hopefully a bit more professional this time. Of course, professionalism versus the Warrior. He just rubs off, doesn't it? Here's the Haku match then. The Haku match has no timestamp or location on it, but we do have the motley commentary team of Ron Trongard and Billy Graham on hand. Ba-da. Haku does have the King tights on, if that helps. So we're probably looking at about February 89 again here, I think. Richard Land, if you're listening, do let me know. Big boot right from the off, and again, he is wasting no time. Body press gets a close two for Jimbo, and Haku cannot get him off his feet. Leapfrog by the Warrior, and yes, I put that in capital letters, but now Haku with a slug of early desperation. It does little, though, as Ultimate, as I've now called him, is there with it. I can't just type Ultimate Warrior every time. I've got to try and mix it up. But I don't say Alt again, you'll be pleased to hear. Ultimate is there with an atomic drop. I don't think that's better. But he misses a charge. Now Haku might have an opening. Oh, God, it's the nerve hold. Thankfully, not for long, though, because Haku ends up meeting the buckle 10 times head first. And would you believe it, those shots actually hurt him. Yeah. Ultimate Warrior, ever the exception to stereotypes. After that, the master of the martial arts manages to land some kicks, though, and back to the nerve pinch we go. Again, though, Warrior out nice and quickly with a kick, a slam, and a splash, but no, he gets the knees. So Haku stomps away again. Choked by the ropes for five, and the third nerve grip gets slapped on. You'd think he would have learned by now, so it's the same outcome. But now Haku dips into the Warrior handbook, but also gets knees on the splash. It's left to the author himself to show him how it is done, though. The splash actually follows a suplex this time round. We're getting some movesets here. And there is the three counts. Tell you what, a leapfrog? A suplex? I'll tell you what, Lacey, Warrior was bringing it in this one.
Yeah, he's definitely doing more than the four moves of doom that he was doing before.
Suplex. Right. A suplex.
I know. So, one thing. Why is it that other than Hacksaw, all of the 80s King of the Rings were heels?
Yeah, they were, weren't they?
Harley Race.
Yep.
Haku and Macho.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, we don't get those original King of the Rings, which that's something else I'd quite like to see on the network, because obviously they were done as one-off shows.
Yeah, I'd like to think some of those were taped. First King of the Ring was, what, 85, I want to say, without looking it up?
About that, because obviously that's when...
I hope there's some footage. Bring back Hidden Gems and get them on there. Carry on.
But yeah, no, Haku does Haku. And, you know, yeah, you said there, he goes on the nerve grip three times. I can live with that with Haku. And, you know, the big kicks. But the thing that got me was a Islander, because, you know, it does all of them, selling a head hit.
What's going
on there?
I had to make reference to that in my notes. Even Billy Graham, okay, not that much gets past him anyway, but even Billy Graham noticed it. Wow.
Yeah, it is always great to see Haku, though. You know, he's one of those of him in early Fed times, then when he's obviously Meng, and then even when he comes back as Afro Haku in like 2002.
2001, we're very close to that. Yeah. Wrestling 20 years ago, very close to that. Comes back.
I'm all for that. And, you know, you wouldn't fuck with him.
Oh, no, you would not fuck with him. No. If you want to keep your nose where nature intended, wide berth, I think. Yeah, I like this, that I could have lived without all four of the nerve holds, even though there were three. But Haku brought it in this one, as he so often does, as is his wont. And I thought Warrior stood up to him quite nicely. He had to do a couple of things vaguely approximating moves, indicated that Haku was actually a tough customer and he would have to really try to do something to beat him. And as this match wasn't especially televised, as I can say. That's the sort of opportunity you have to really mix things up. And again, if you're the Warrior, you don't really need to do that. You know, you're not paid by the hour. You're certainly not paid by the move. But this was him, dare I say it, letting his hair down a little bit and at least vaguely experimenting. Use the word vaguely a lot today. Vaguely experimenting with a couple of different styles for him. I appreciate we're only talking about a leapfrog and a suplex, but I thought the effort was there on this one.
Yeah, it's one of those of... Obviously, with Warrior, pretty much all the way through his whole run, he has his formula.
Oh, yeah.
This was that, but with a bit of extra garnish chucked in.
It felt that he had to go there to beat Haku. That's the impression I got from it. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. I probably am, but my show, I'm allowed to. Fun little match here, worth checking out, but fast forward the nerve holds. Warrior passed all the tests laid down by his ancestors, but then they told him a further test would be required. An ultimate challenge, yes, he says that, against the World Wrestling Federation champion. Everybody, let's not get ahead of ourselves now, eh? Well, I suppose he did say a ultimate challenge and not the, which brings us to Ultimate Warrior versus WWF champion Randy Savage. We are in Bloomington, and you know we are watching this on the network as the Superstars of Wrestling banners are all greyed out. Damn you, Albert Patterson. But if they could do that, could they not resource this match from the master tape? Because for whatever reason, the video quality is very poor on this one. Looked like washed out third generation stuff to me. If anything needed remastering, it was this. I'd say they must have the master tape, but this one didn't look all that great. But through the murk, this is what we get. We get Macho jumping before he gets his robe off, but he's only met with a devastating shoulder block. Savage jaws with the crowd in the way only he can, but gets press slammed back into the ring, rather gingerly. Savage lays in wait for a swift shot, then a glorious body press from the top rope. But Warrior catches him and places him in the old tree of woe. Joey Morella gets up on the ropes to help free Savage, and as such, Warrior misses the buckle charge, a lot of that today. He goes outside and is met by the double axe handle. Randy is back into the ring, and apparently this one is title for title. So Savage gets him in as well, and that neck snap move, somebody needs to bring that back. But then, as soon as I type that, I realise that nobody could do it anyway, anywhere near as well. Two count for the world champ. Standing elbow and another swift pin attempt, and I just love that Savage would just go for covers off anything. Warrior up from a chin lock, but what a clothesline by Savage. He just took off for that. Another great axe handle, but Warrior is out at one this time. The kick out sending Savage into the ropes. Suplex by Warrior for two. There it is again. And what is Rick Rude doing here? Oh, he's just here to pose. Oh, of course he is. Savage grabs the tights for a close two, but then of course gets the knees up on a splash attempt, but it's okay when he does it. Rude is indeed just making sure Vince notices him on the outside, if you get me. Warrior no-sells punches, and here it comes. He does the Mick Shannon Windmill arms thing, look it up, and after three big shots, he goes after Rude rather than cover. Rude is choked, so Savage gets another double axe to the back, then nips back into the ring before the count of 10. The heels exchange a hug and handshake afterwards, but Jim isn't having that. He sees Randy off, then exacts further revenge of Rick, including a big press slam. Christopher, it wasn't quite what we would get 2 years down the line, but this was a pretty decent hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah,
I liked a lot of this.
This was awesome. This was one of those where, obviously, neither of them were going to lose.
No.
And this way, both looked really strong with the count out. Obviously, they were pushing towards Mania 5, which is obviously where we get Rude and Warrior. So obviously, that was what they were wanting to do anyway. So it shows that Warrior can be in there with your top guy. Macho clearly didn't mind being in there with him because he's not winging it or, you know, just sort of part of letting it flow by. He's actually putting in a decent match. He's hitting all his shit. Warrior hits all his shit. It was, for the time, and if I'd have saw it, and that was clearly a telly match, you see that on a Saturday afternoon on Superstars, you think you fucking hit the lottery seeing that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah. this was everything it needed to be and everything I hoped it would be, given the time frame. I love that, again, Warrior brought the offense in this one. It felt like a world title match, even though there was zero chance of either of these guys doing the job at this point. Never going to happen. It still managed to have a bit of importance surrounding it, and that's no mean feat when so many of these type of matches were always going to end in a count out or DQ. The amount of tapes I'm going to go through as part of this project, I'll be seeing count out and DQs left, right and center. Didn't mind it here because the action to get there was so good, and it shows that WrestleMania 7 didn't come from nowhere. This was probably just short of pay-per-view quality, but I saw a lot from Warrior. Savage is Savage, as you could probably tell from my write-up. I was just gushing, and who wouldn't? Warrior, there are hints of this one, of the Mr. Pay-per-view that we would see from the Warrior over the next 2, maybe 3 years. Big Match Jim, as a colleague of mine called him not so long ago. He made this match feel important. His offense was good. It was crisp enough. It was basic, but it was clean. He timed his comebacks well. It felt really well put together. And I have no doubt that Savage was wholly responsible for that. Somebody we know liked to plan his matches meticulously. So there's no way that Warrior was going to get away with calling it in the ring. I'm not sure he ever did that either, but beside the point, Savage made sure this was a sensibly put together match with a beginning, a middle and an end, and we got it. So yeah, don't sleep on this one, everybody. It's not very long. I think it's only about probably 10 minutes maximum. Like, don't go in expecting even SummerSlam 92, let alone WrestleMania 7. But as a warm-up for those matches, you could do a lot, lot worse. Both guys were feeling this one. Nobody could blame Savage in particular if he dogged it, but he didn't. This was prime Savage and approaching prime Warrior. Definitely check this one out. Warrior talks about the cheap shot Rude gave him, but it was never going to work because of, and I quote, the eye in the back of my head, the Warrior's all over my body parts. I'll give you all a couple of seconds to take that one, so to speak.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
We know where he keeps it. So we're getting all of the super pose down from Rumble 89 unedited. Full disclosure, I actually watched Rumble 89 just a few days ago, and I skipped this whole segment. I should have known. I did watch it all for the sake of this video, but I'm not going to recap it. For that, I point you in the direction of Place to Be podcast number 511. In essence, Brain sucks up to the crowd, who of course are the people making the decision as to who wins, because that's fair. Warrior and Rude do various poses. Rude's dubbed in music is cloying, let's say that. The crowd hate Rude. They don't hate Warrior. Rude then jumps in with that steel bar and really does a number on him. Various officials try to help, but Warrior attacks everybody, including Nick Bockwinkel, who takes two bumps off him. We then get a shot of the steel bar as Gorilla says he made an enemy for life. Hey, Christopher, it's this one. All 15, 20 minutes of this one explain themselves, really, so I'm not going to give it a blow-by-blow account, but effective?
I fucking hate this.
Okay.
This is clearly Vince and Jesse's fucking jerk-off session.
Well, they did it the year before.
Let's look at lads with big fucking muscles.
This segment sucks, Jesse.
not this one. And the thing is, I fucking hated it when Steiner and Hunter did it. In the 2000s.
Oh, don't remind me of that. Oh, we got you that. Know, oh, Lacey, no.
There's no fucking need for it. There's no need for it to go as fucking long as it goes.
Why did you
pick if you're going to do it, don't even do it. If you're going to do it on telly at the most. But on fucking pay-per-view, fuck off.
Yeah, I'm so glad you've said I feared the worst on this one, but I should never have doubted you. Yeah, just horrifyingly long. When I watched Rumble 89 for my own personal enjoyment last Sunday, I skipped all of this for good reason, and I watched this tape shortly afterwards hoping it was going to be edited. When you see what is edited later on, your skin is going to crawl. But we got the whole goddamn thing now, within 30 seconds. That 30 seconds doing well today. Within 30 seconds of this, you knew what was going to happen. Rude just attacking right off the bat, and just have done with it.
It's the thing, I remembered it from obviously watching Mania as many, or Rumble as many times as I had. I forgot how fucking long it goes, and that's what fucks me off even more. It's just, it goes on for fucking ever. It is just there for Vince and Jesse to have a fucking circle jerk over it because they love bodybuilding.
Oh, completely. Completely, you know, because Vince did dislike the segment the year before, so he was going to make sure he had a proper one at the Rumble this time, especially on pay-per-view, damn it. Yeah, just mortifyingly long. Stays intact on the Coliseum video version while Haku versus Harley Race is cut out of it. For years, I didn't even know that match existed. Yeah, I all too well knew this one existed. An audience of two, I think, to turn a rather common phrase on its head. Just too much, and especially with the dub in, having to endure Rude's horrible Network Edition music five times. Oh, just no good in this one whatsoever. It does set up the match we're about to see, and kudos to Mick Bockwinkel for taking bumps from the Warrior. Yeah, this is a really, really bad segment. One that's just all about nostalgia, I think. Superposed out. Oh yeah, that was at Rumble 89, wasn't it? Yeah, that's familiarity breeding contempt, I fear. But the only place to go after that is the IC title match at WrestleMania 5, although we don't get the whole thing on this tape. We join in progress. Why could we not do that before? With Warrior applying a bear hug. I will, of course, pick up from here, but for a full rundown of this match, I again recommend you check out the Place to Be podcast. Episode number 519 is their WrestleMania 5 breakdown. So from the bear hug, Rude sells the back as Warrior puts in a bite. Gorilla explains that away by dint of him being hungry. Well, it's an explanation, I guess. He then runs off two sets of ropes and misses the splash by miles. Rude got the knees up, but he had to move around a bit to do it. Great pile driver by Rude, but he can't cover. The delayed one gets two. Jawbreaker by Rick, and then in a famous moment, he tries to swivel the hips, but the pain is too great. He does, though, lock on some arm lock type thing that Warrior is able to shake his way out of. Flying tackle and a better face plant than earlier. Not hard. Backbreaker by Warrior, but then in an odd moment, they sort of fall just towards the ropes. I think Jim lost his balance there. But no matter, though, as it is corner splash time until Ultimate, I called him that again, misses one. Is it Rude awakening time? Nope, because Warrior is able to block it. Rude slithers out of there and gets thrown back in to be clotheslined back out. And then, in a finish that will soon bear this match's very name, Heenan grabs Warrior's leg as he tries to suplex him back in and holds it down so he can't kick out. We have a new IC champion. As soon as the bell rings, and I love this, Warrior is straight up, not to no sell, it's because he's got a Bobby Heenan to try to stalk. Rude then escapes, and another great visual. Rude is lurking by the entranceway until Warrior sees him, and then he pisses off with the belt. Good, good stuff. Chris, I think they did better at SummerSlam 89, but on this tape, we don't know that yet. Again, we don't get the whole thing on this tape either. Yes, I'm bitter about it. I really do enjoy this one.
So this is what I put on here. Half of this match, but all of the fucking pose down. Mm-hmm. Fuck you.
I think we know who executive producer might have been for this tape. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah. This is... Yes, there's a few botched shots in it. Yes, there's a few fuck-ups. But these two had such a chemistry. I love Heenan cheating to win. That's exactly what heel should do. I love the fact they put a loss on the video as well, because then obviously, because what we get next segment makes sense because of obviously we know how he lost and he lost the belt and all of that. And this is one of those pivotal moments in the career of Warrior, because obviously that's when we then get him and Rude going properly off and everything going forward. So I don't know why they didn't put the whole match on. It baffles the fuck out of me, but it is an awesome match and probably one of the better things that happens at Mania 5.
Yeah, Mania 5 is an odd show. It's one I actually find myself watching quite a lot if I have a spare 3.5 hours. Let's face it, who doesn't these days? I will find myself gravitating towards it on the network. think it's because it's one of the VHS tapes I remember owning when I were a nipper, so there's obviously been a nostalgia factor there as well. There's a lot of inconsequential matches. The Trump Plata is horrible. Both of those things need to be made, points need to be made, and I will make them until and beyond the cows come home. But it does have an allure to it. It feels like a very important event. As meaningless in themselves as a lot of the matches on the card are, I do get the sense they're all feeding in towards the main event. Off the top of my head, yes, this is the second best match after the main event, and it's probably not far behind it. Their second best pay-per-view match, I'm not too struck on the SummerSlam 91. It was heatless, and Warrior had already beaten him convincingly there. But this was great. They really did bounce off each other, and as you say, they had fine chemistry. And some really good timing in this match. And here, I think people were expecting a fairly routine Warrior title defense. I mean, Rude hadn't exactly pulled up any trees in the previous year and a half. He had the match with Steamboat at Rumble 88. He had the dog, a 15-minute draw with Jake at WrestleMania 4. They had their feud that Jake eventually won fairly decisively at MSG. So Rude wasn't, if he didn't have Bobby, he didn't have much else. But here he does end up beating the Warrior, being the man who gives Heenan his first ever title. How incredible is that to think of? But it's true, after almost 5 years. And the match to get there was good. They brought the moveset yet again. Rude's pole driver was great. It occurred before the cut-in on this tape, but a glorious missile dropkick, which you should definitely check out if you haven't seen it. Warrior's flying tackles look good. Everything in this match just looked good. I wouldn't say they set their bar especially high, but they did get to their target and with some room to spare. I really do enjoy this one. And again, like I said, I've seen some idiots, I'm going to go there, revisionist historians, saying that Warrior didn't sell the loss. He was straight up. What do you expect? His feet were held down. It wasn't as if it was a finishing move that hurt him. And when he did get back up, he did so for a reason. Because he had a Bobby Heenan to try to fuck up. Yeah, exactly. He knew straight away that Heenan was the reason he lost the match and lost the belt. So he's going to go after him. Honestly, the internet is its own worst enemy sometimes in pro wrestling, but what else is new? Anyway,
and thanks to that, we then got the year of Heenan versus Rude, obviously, on house shows, but also him versus Heenan in Weasel Suit matches, which you would have seen if we had the proper video. Him and Andre.
Check out one of those.
Yes. Which, again, if we'd had the proper video, we'd have been able to see. So, you know, this was that pivotal point that then made it that he wasn't just Warrior versus Rude, it was Warrior versus the Heenan family.
And he eventually came all the way back around to vanquishing him again at SummerSlam 89 in a legitimately great match. Not on this tape, because this one cuts off in May 89. Yeah, tremendous match on a Mania I have a real odd affinity with. Let's leave it at that. So we get to the end of the tape with highlights of the first rematch, that's what it calls it, from the Boston Garden on April the 22nd, 1989. Warrior gets everything right from the bell, and the crowd are there for it. All the old faves here, including shots for Heenan, but then we cut away before we get to see any finish. Then we cut to another match between the two from the Meadowlands on May the 8th, 1989. Once more, the boys in the mothership have a full review of this one for you. Check out PTB number 521. Again, here we get Warrior offense and nothing else. We see Rude getting a literal kicking before the man himself closes us out. Again, we don't see the finish of the match. He will not return to where he comes from until his mission has been accomplished. The venom and poison of the Warriors has been injected into your body, and there is no one in the WWF that can handle the Ultimate Warrior. No, Christopher, rather odd finish to the tape, really. They probably wanted to tell us that the Rude feud was continuing. As I say, when this tape was issued, SummerSlam 89 had yet to happen. But I think you probably said it best a couple of minutes ago. They probably didn't want to outright finish the tape on a Warrior defeat. So 7 minutes of them beating Rude up twice, probably the way to go.
And we get to see Rude's wonderful selling.
Oh, yes.
Because I have Rude selling an atomic drop like someone has just absolutely fucking Rochambeau'd him with steel toe cap is fucking magical. The knees bent inwards, half bent over, look of shock and pain in his face that he's just been dropped on his bollocks. That's selling.
That is,
and that's the thing that Rude could do so well. And that's the thing. Yeah, all right, we didn't get the full matches. I would imagine they probably end in smozzes or Heenan getting involved, count outs or something like that. That's why we didn't get them. But fuck me, that was just amazing. Just seeing his selling.
Yeah, again, it would have been so easy for Rude, especially in these. Well, I don't know how. I think the Meadowlands one was actually transmitted on the MSG network. Not sure what the audience was for the Boston Garden show, but to sell an atomic drop, even just that sentence, to sell an atomic drop, that's enough. But to sell it the way he did, no, even Kurt Hennig couldn't sell an atomic drop like that. It's amazing. In the course of my time doing these podcasts, I've seen some poor sells of it, like Liz selling it by lightly tapping her own ass, for example. Maybe not the fairest of comparisons, but it's the first one that popped into my head. I can't think why. But check these out. If you don't end the tape after the WrestleMania 5 match, do watch these 7 or 8 minutes to see Warrior in his version of Full Fright, because he goes 100% full pelt on this one. There's no pausing, no resting, at least what we get. And Rude is selling big time for him. And it just made me want to dig out SummerSlam 89 for the 89th time this year. But that does end this tape. So, Chris Lacey, we've come to the end of the Warrior Vid 1989. Short and sharp, like the great man's greatest work. Let's do some awards, shall we? And I think this one might be interesting. So what is our rewind for this tape? Our best match or moments? Where are you going to go?
It has to be the Macho match. Just because, as a match, it is the best match on the tape. Closely followed by that last 7 minutes of just Rude selling, but the match against Macho is where I would go. If you're going to watch it, watch that. And, you know, then just watch the Rude bit at the end too.
Agreed. If the Rude match had been shown here in its entirety, I probably would have gone for that one, just due to the slight brevity of the Savage Warrior match. But I am picking that one here. We did get the whole thing. We did get to see the building blocks being put in place for the greatness that was to follow. Got to see Warrior really upping his game for the first time in his WWF career. And of course, it's not one you can find readily in many other places. So for me, rewind the Macho Savage match in the middle of this tape from early 1989. What would be your fast forward moment though, Chris, the worst match or segment?
I think that's pretty obvious. Fuck you, pose down.
What else could it be? 20 minutes, everybody. 20 minutes. Just do yourselves a favour, okay? What's our pause moment, the most striking visual on this tape?
See, it's, again, one of two. Either Rude selling the atomic drop Rochambeau punted in the nuts look, or right at the beginning, and the whole purpose for that whole beginning, I was going to say match, but segment, Warrior breaking the chain.
Yeah, there you go. See, 3 for 3. That is mine. That's all we needed to see. As dump as the match was, that's it. This guy, because Hercules is supposed to be the Hercules, and completed the trials and all of that. And now he faces this Ultimate Warrior guy from parts unknown who just outright breaks his fucking chain. Yeah, that's, you know, this guy's the real deal. He's somebody you probably don't want to be messing with. Whatever Homer might have written about you 3,000 years before, I'm sure that's not true, but never mind. Yes, 3 for 3, breaking the chain. And that's Hercules getting in a good award, but probably the first ever time on these shows. Normally, I do a fourth award. That's Video Star for our MVP, but I don't really think we need to waste too much time on awarding our MVP award here, Christopher.
What? The man himself? The Ultimate Warrior.
But you did at least... can't cut you off before the snort. I did at least give you the opportunity to do that. So, our final award. What do you think of this tape as a whole? A buy, which means bloody good. A rent, which means pretty good. A bargain bin, which is, can check it out at some point. Or they are a wipe, which is very much an avoid. Where are we going?
See, this is pretty hard because it sits on the cusp of two. It sits there on that cusp of rent and bargain bin because as a whole video, it's not great. But there is bits in here that you won't see anywhere else that you really should go out of your way to see. That match against Macho Man, the stuff with Rude, post-Mania, the Haku match, they're all things that you should really see. But, you know, the Valentine shit, the fact that we had the whole 20 minutes of the pose down, those things really don't need to see. So as I said, it sits like on that cusp, but I think because when it's good, it is good. I think it's a rent. And fast forward,
agreed. I think it's a solid rent for me, solidly in category two. There's enough good here to bring you to the table, especially if you're somebody who does have his or her doubts about Warrior, and I can understand that. I'm getting a newfound appreciation of in-ring Warrior over the last few years, it must be said, and things like this are helping. The Macho match, absolutely. WrestleMania 5 match, not that we get it all, without a doubt. Him almost showing his working in matches like Haku, the Haku one, really, really interesting. Yes, there's some junk here. The Valentine match is a waste of time. The Honky rematch is too long. But then you get the SummerSlam 88 squash on there as well, which is great. We don't need any of the post. If a post down wasn't here, or we just got clips from it, I would come quite close to putting it into the buy category and saying it's a must have. As it is, it falls a little below that, but not too much. I think one of the strongest, the most consistent tapes I've done in the course of this project, perhaps surprisingly, but there you go. A very solid rent. Ultimate Warrior 1989 is what you were looking for on the network if you want to check it out. And as we both awarded it a rent, we think you very much should do so if and when you have a spare 1 hour, 25 minutes. And if I regularly...
But just skip the whole...
Let's skip the pose down. There you go.
Pose down. The length of this you've done yourself a favour.
Yeah. Skip the fucking pose down. Yeah, just... You can definitely find an hour and 5 minutes to watch the video if I can find 3.5 hours to watch WrestleMania 5 seemingly every single week. But Chris, there you go. We have done the 1989 Ultimate Warrior tape. First things first, I will endeavour to find the UK Ultimate Warrior 1991 somehow, some way, if it doesn't appear on the network. And I will have you back on to go through that one. Although I do feel like you've given us a pretty solid review of it already.
Well, yeah, we've still got to rewatch it. I'm gonna see, you know, if I ever, you know, get a text from the ex that says, "Can you go clear your shit out of the loft?" I'll see if it's still up there and if there's a way of transferring VHS to a digital file somehow. But I'm not making any promises.
Ever the tape trader, Chris Lacey. There we are. If you do, be sure to get in touch and we'll have you on to go through it. But Chris, do tell the populace out there listening on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network where they can find you and what else you've got going on.
So, as you would have told them a plethora of times, you can find me and Rory at Wrestling 20 Years Ago. I am the resident host of the ECW show. We are coming to a timely end with ECW, just doing the September show and then lost telly. So, you know, the downfall was clearly starting. Though surprisingly, they end TV and have a load of pay-per-views every month. So that is At Wrestling 20 Years Ago. You can find that on all your usual podcast playing devices of and apps and such. I used to host a music podcast called Show and Tell the Tunes, which that is on hiatus at the moment due to copyright infringements that, you know, American companies didn't like. But I am looking at doing another way of doing the music podcast again, but maybe doing it as like a live stream where it's then not recorded and there's not so many issues. I don't know. It's something that I'm looking into. But other than that, mainly yakking about ECW and occasionally turning up on WCW to call Russo a cunt.
Nobody does it better, Chris, I'll tell you. Well, you're lucky you're not on the September shows this month where he wins the fucking title.
Oh, was that this month? I thought that was next month.
No, you ducked out of that one.
I was expecting to get a, you need to come on for this when he won the title. just literally what. As a sort of a cameo, sort of flying, just watch this, what, you know, what do you think? Type thing.
He's a cunt, and there you go, and sod off again. Yeah, okay. Well, you'll get opportunities when we do our Wrestling 20 Years Ago end of year award show in December. That's always a good time anyway. And the Russo hate, I'm there for it.
See, the fact that some people weren't even going to go with it last year until I, you know, coined the concept of Russo.
The concept of Russo. Coming to a t-shirt near you. Watch out for that. Yeah, I think this year it's going to float even easier. Every bad award has got his name on it, and quite rightly so. But yes, you can find us on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. As I say, by the time this show goes out, the WCW show looking at September 2000, Fall Brawl 00 and all that. Russo's Revenge, Russo winning the title, Russo should be out any day now. So do watch out for that one. We've got our WWF show. Unforgiven 2000, of course, is the focus there. And Chris and ECW will be dropping, if they haven't already, very shortly.
It's gone up early.
As we speak, the ECW show is out. So that's fantastic. So you will definitely be able to check that one out if you haven't already. But of course, you all have. You can also hear me here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network every month with the chaps Callum McDougall and Ben Locke on the Special Relations, where we talk about all things wrestling, past, present, maybe even future sometimes. And I say, just check me out on Wrestling 20 Years Ago. Drop us a line there on Twitter if you want to get in touch at Wrestling20YRS. And that's pretty much it. Just say, Chris, thank you so much for making your debut on this show, the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. We will be sure to have you back on here forthwith. You have already made another request.
Oh, there's two.
Two?
Yeah, there's a certain follow-up to this, and, you know, an event show.
The event show you have chosen, we've already done a previous version of that event. There you go. Cycle through the archives, see what it is. But Lacey, don't worry, the newer one will be made safe for you. And, of course, Ultimate Warrior 1992 is a given when we get there as well. So make a note. You'll be hearing a lot more of Chris Lacey on this show. And a bloody good thing, too, says I. And he didn't pay me to say that. But if he wants to, he's quite welcome to.
No, you true... PayPal me, yeah?
I was thinking it's true. Jesse Ventura, SummerSlam 88 style. He gave me the money. What am I meant to do with it?
Though, as I said, I noticed that on your normal feed, it doesn't have the explicit E. I burnt it for you this week.
You bloody have. You saved it to the end, but I say that's the thing about you, about Lacey. Yeah. Shoot from the hip is one of the expressions they could use about you.
Well, I am the reason that 20 years ago had to have an explicit rating.
Very, very much so. NSFW. Let's talk about NSFW. But wherever you are listening to this, we hope you have enjoyed it. Really enjoyed recording it with my buddy Chris, who will be back on these shows before too long. I will catch you again next month for another dip into the home video classics section of the WWE Network. But again, from Chris Lacey, I have been Rory McNamara, an Ultimate Warrior 1989. I have seen your video, and I'll catch you all next month. Thanks for listening.
let go now! Let go of the body parts and flow in the pathways of all the normal people. Because where I come from, where only creatures of bad habit live, beasts that you can only imagine, I will not return until my mission has been accomplished. You recruits seem to think that laughter is the best medicine for the deed that you have accomplished. Let me remind you that the venom, the poison of the warriors, has been injected into your frail, weak body. And as you become slow and lethargic, the warrior will only squash you into the pulp that you already are. Because you understand, there is no one in the WWF or the entire universe that can deal or handle the Ultimate Warrior!
Finish me off, you wimp! What's the matter? Too spicy for ya!
Pepper Army. It's a bit of an animal.